All right, and welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. This is Chad, your host, and I am here with a couple Coast to Coasters, Dale over on the East Coast and up in the North Coast, Chip. Jim, unfortunately, is at a very prestigious work dinner event for the holiday season, so he couldn't make it in today, but we will move on without him with, I would expect, piles of praise for Denzel Ward and shaming of the Buffalo Bills. You guys doing all right over there?
It's a good Victory Tuesday.
Yes, I was trying to enjoy this Victory Tuesday as long as I could because bad news just kept piling on throughout the day. But I'm still optimistic. We're looking good.
Yeah, you guys will have to update me on some of that as we go along. I was slammed all day today, and I missed a lot of the incoming news. Of course, all that can change during the week in a COVID world, so we'll see where we end up. But you guys are right. It is a Victory Tuesday, and it is one that I am pretty excited about. I listened to quite a few podcasts, Browns and NFL-related, myself, and I think a lot of mixed responses. So we'll see how this goes. But a lot of people really excited with the win. A lot of people still pretty upset with the team. I'm on the positive side. I was really excited about this win. I was really excited while it was happening and once the final buzzer went off. And you know, with the Steelers, Bengals, and Ravens, obviously the Ravens all going down, it is a big week for the Browns, and I'm not going to let a close victory hinder that. So happy Victory Tuesday, and cheers to you guys.
Yeah, cheers. I'd agree with all that.
So we're going with another, in celebration, we're going with another Tis the Season Christmas Ale pod today. You guys have anything worth chatting about?
So I am actually sipping on a beer, an Avon Brewery, which is one of my favorite local breweries. It is
pretty
a
Christmas. Bye to you.
Yeah. It is a Christmas ale, but I am just taking small sips as I am nursing my way getting through COVID as well as the majority of the population, I guess. So I'm trying to take it easy.
Half the NFL, week. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, bummer. Glad you're doing okay.
Quick funny story, though, I'd like to just throw in there really quick. About a week and a half ago, if you know me, you know I like eggnog, and I wait the majority of the year for the winter months to enjoy it. In fact, I don't even need snow to start falling. I'll start as soon as that time change happens. But anyway, so I had an eggnog about a week and a half ago, closer to 2 weeks ago, and I was getting ready to pour it out. My wife was like, what's the matter? And I said, honey, I think this nog is bad. She's like, we just got it. And here I couldn't taste it. And then I realized, no, don't take this nog from me. Of course, that's what I couldn't taste. So
that's the number one sign. Yeah, that's been so consistent, man. So many people just lose that sense of taste and smell. That's a big one.
Yes.
Well, hopefully you get that back soon. I know it can linger for a long time.
Better than taking the test.
Well, I did take the test the following day, and then that's how we found out, you know, it all.
Right up the brain. All right, Dale, what are you drinking over there?
I went with something local as well. Went with Hardywood. They have a bunch of different kinds of beers. They do a lot of barrel-aged stuff, bourbon stuff, but they have a nice Christmas. It's like a gingerbread stout.
Ooh, so, nice. A little different.
Always try to – yeah, they mix it up around the holidays. They're always adding all kinds of different stuff in there, but it's pretty good. And if you like a bourbon or barrel age type things, that they definitely keep that going all year long. But and it tastes delicious, so I'm in the clear.
Okay, good. I have a local favorite that you guys might or might not know of. It is not my favorite style of Christmas ale, but it is the Ocean Beach collaboration Crooked Tree, obviously in honor of every year's Ocean Beach Christmas tree. And it was a collab between basically Thorn Brewing Company and all the OB brewers, Pizza Port, Kilowatt, Rincon, Yeah, Coronado, Hodads. It's just a bunch of of these local brewers get together and they do. And it's similar to what you had talked about last week, Chip. It is a West Coast IPA, obviously, being out here with the spruce tips on it.
Mm-hmm.
It has like a little bit also of almost a citrusy flavor at the end too, though. So I do like it. I like IPAs probably more than you guys, though. So it works out for me. It's not my favorite style of Christmas beer, but it's kind of just a must-have Ocean Beach Christmas classic. So I grabbed a four-pack of those, and that's what I'll be sipping on today.
Cool. You know, I thought that was kind of cool how we all did a little local theme, and we didn't plan that.
Yeah, and different. They were all very different, too, which is cool. I think, you know, there's not that much Christmas to be out here, and there needs to be more because you can do it so many different ways. And so hopefully that continues to catch on out here outside of Kilowatt, where those brewers are actually from the Cleveland area. So they're the only people who make a Cleveland style Christmas ale, but almost nobody else makes any type of Christmas ale. So I'll be excited if that culture catches on out here eventually. So, all right, well, we'll be sipping those along the way. We'll probably, Chip will be a little less stuttery at the end of the podcast today with his baby sips.
Yep.
We don't have much breaking news today unless you guys caught anything before the podcast started. I only wanted to bring up that one Lamar rumor that cracked me up because it may be something that comes up at different times along the podcast. And I don't know if you guys heard this. I'm trying to remember where I saw it on Twitter. It might've been Mary Kay, said that she had heard from someone that when they were discussing Lamar's injury and him leaving the game, she had heard a rumor that Lamar might have been able to come back in the game and that the injury wasn't that serious, but the coaches felt like the team responded really well to Huntley and they had a lot of energy and he looked pretty good out there. So they decided to let him ride. I don't know if that's true or not, but it really kind of made me like shake my head because I think he did really put on a pretty good show. And Lamar has been in rough shape the last two or three weeks. I don't think there's much denying he's had a bad season for him for sure. And definitely the last few weeks he has been way down. So little spark under Huntley. Just wondering what you guys thought of that.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I hadn't heard that, but I mean, it makes sense. They're not untouchable, but they're fairly secure. And if the team's moving, you want to protect Lamar at all costs. I wouldn't, if I was a Ravens fan, I wouldn't begrudge them for doing that.
Honestly, I felt a little disrespected because I thought those bastards probably thought he would beat the Browns with Huntley. And they're looking at him. He's running all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, sure. To Huntley's credit, you know, he was thrown in a little unexpected and still dropped 270 yards, touchdown. So, I mean, he did throw a pretty good game.
And this is his second action, and he's looked pretty decent. So it's rough seeing that they have a backup who can actually play Lamar's game. But we'll keep hitting on Huntley a little bit as we go. I just thought that was a really interesting report. I don't know if it's true, but it just made me kind of shake my head a bit.
First hearing his name a couple weeks ago, did not think it was Taylor Huntley and had, of course, heard of what his real name was.
Brett Huntley.
Yeah.
It's like Tyler Huntley, Brett Huntley.
Yeah.
It could have been a couple guys.
There was a few of them. I wasn't getting there.
Yeah, tricky. So the Browns did win. I had marked on my notebook, this was one of their more balanced attacks, especially against a team that we know is locked in against the run. I think the Ravens are top four in the NFL against the run this season. So, but I think we talked about this last week. Chip, you brought up the point that you have to pass. This team is so bad against the pass that regardless of our running, we have to be able to pass the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim and I both thought, you know, with the way things have been going with pass protection and Baker and the lack of receivers, if you can't run, you're doomed. And they actually did a pretty good job. 32 passes to 23 rushes, which against a team that's so bad against the pass, and that's probably a pretty good breakdown.
And
how do you guys feel about the game flow?
Considering Marlon Humphrey was out as well, that definitely opens up the secondary.
Yeah, it's hard not to try to go down the field on him. It was a shame we didn't have a Njoku. I think that would have been a huge weapon against this team in particular, but
yeah,
they made it work without him. So I just thought it was a really good balance. It was nice to see them not give up on the run completely, but work it in and play against the Ravens' weakness.
I mean, I thought the first half the offense looked as good as I would expect it to look. I was happy with everything I saw. It's a shame to see the third and fourth quarter go without a score. I mean, not even three.
Yeah, and so, we'll get to that. I do think they came off the gas a little bit. It also was a bummer because I think they did have one or two good drives in the second half, and they just turned it into no points and a missed field goal, and that was a bummer because they just – I think they could have at least thrown one more on the board. But you're right, the first half at least looked good, and it hasn't looked good in a while, so I'll take it. Mayfield – who had one of his better games in a pretty long while, went 20 for 25 from a clean pocket. I don't know his entire stat line, but I know he's 20 from 25 with a clean pocket, which has been a rough spot for him this week, and it should be an automatic, which is great. And he had an adjusted completion percentage of 77% almost, which, thank goodness, which basically just takes out plays with drops.
So he had 22 completions total, which means he only had two from a non-clean pocket.
Okay.
Yeah. He was in there with 32 attempts. Yeah. So
yeah. Okay.
Out of 25. So that's on still rush only plays. Like seven.
Yeah, and that's pretty good. And I like the adjusted completion percentage because we have had some problems with the dropsies between, you know, Jarvis, Njoku, Peoples, even some of the guys we like. And so it's nice to see when they just take out the drops and they just count, you know, passes that were completed or missed. And that looks pretty good. He had one of his better ratings for a while, and he made a couple rushes. He looks a little bit more mobile. I think some of the time off, at least, you know, most of the games at the end, he's looked a little rougher by the end of the game than he does at the beginning. He's had one or two where he looked pretty shit even at the beginning, but he was able to run out of the pocket and he moved better today. I think that looks pretty clear. So
yeah, I saw that and was a little surprised myself.
Yeah. So that was good. And that was one of the big positives. We'll get to the PFF scores in a bit, but he finally had a decent one, which he hasn't had since like the Bengals game. So thank goodness. So I brought up earlier in the podcast that I heard a lot of negativity after this game, and I understand it after we lost to after we beat the Lions so closely, feeling like, man, you this looks like garbage. I honestly thought the defense looked tremendous. I thought the offense looked great in the first half and just slowed down and had the second half, and we'll get to some of the problems that they had later. But overall, I mean, this was the kind of outing they should have had the last time they played the Ravens and the last time they played the Steelers. And if they had just put together what they put together yesterday, we wouldn't even be in this mess. We'd be clearly in first place and nobody would be talking about anything. So I'm not going to be down on them for this. I think this was the kind of win you have to put up against a rival team, regardless of the circumstance. And I think they did it. The stat I had on the page for you guys down there, the 12 of 46, you might have been wondering what that was. That is the amount of times the Browns have ever beaten the Ravens
in the
entire history of them playing each other. They played 46 times before yesterday. They had 11 total victories against the Ravens in the last 21 years. So to anybody who's not excited about this win, I'm just taking it. We really need to work that number back, and it's going to take a long time. So I'll take it.
Yeah, you put it like that, I'll take it.
Yeah, it just put it in a little perspective. I was like, well, geez, we can never beat this team. So we'll move on to a couple of the PFF scores. Do you guys have anybody specific you were wondering about, or do you just want me to run through a couple of them?
I do. Our new right tackle, James Hudson, is where my eyes were. And I thought he did really well.
This one's going to spark some conversation. He did really well in one aspect, and he did awful in the other. So his total PFF score was actually only a 45, which is kind of what Blake Hance has been putting up lately. But if I'm remembering correctly, I think his pass protection grade was like a 70. He really struggled against to create on rushing downs. He was terrible. He had a PFF score of like 28 or 29 on rushing plays. But his pass protection grade was really good, and he only gave up like two pressures. So pretty good. It makes for an interesting argument, though, because Blake Hantz, who has been terrible, his PFF score through the whole season has been around 40. But his rushing grade has been around like 65 to 70. And his pass protection grade has been the one that's been down like consistently in the like 30s to 40, like really, really bad consistently. So it kind of makes me wonder what they're going to do going forward. Obviously, they protected Baker Mayfield way better. And to give Hudson a little credit, he had to do his first start pretty much against a top team in the entire NFL. I think they're number three or four total in stopping the run. So his rushing grade might be a little skewed by the fact that his only sample size is against pretty much one of the consistently best rush defenses in the NFL. So that's a tough one, but his pass protection was way better. And you're right. If he can, it's easier, I think, to fix rushing blocking, he's not that powerful. Just learning how to do it.
You made a good point there about the Ravens and their run defense. It's hard to grade someone on playing back-to-back Ravens defense for the run defense.
Yeah, it's like getting a rookie receiver, fifth round receiver's first game, and they have to go in against like Denzel Ward. It's like, well, that's not going to look good. You're playing somebody who's pretty elite versus you just trying to figure out what the hell you're doing. So I gave him a little pass, but you're right. If you thought it looked better, because when Baker Mayfield was back there, it was much cleaner. Did you guys see they brought in Blake Hantz a bunch?
No, I didn't notice.
He was in the game like for 15 plays. They just kept putting him in at tight end to block.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't even notice.
He got a
it,
which is tough because we're already shorthanded at tight end. Yep. And then the move is bring in tight ends to chip and help. And you can't do that if you don't have any tight ends when your whole scheme is based off of running two at a time to begin with.
So our backup left guard is also apparently our backup right tight end. I don't know. But it was pretty crazy. It was pretty crazy. What about you, Dale? Was anybody you were wondering about?
Did Garrett set a new record yet, or did he go over 100? I mean, tongue in cheek there, but
he was 90, so pretty darn close. So Garrett came out with a 90, and that puts him for the season as the number one edge defender on PFF's score. It's a pretty obvious top five. I'm not on it right now, right. But mm-hmm. he put himself.
I assume you can say Watt, Bosa.
Yeah, I think Watt's about number four. I can click on it real quick. It takes about 2 seconds. He also, I believe, registered another sack, and he is holding that sack record for the Browns, but he's going for the top sack record altogether. Right now, at the top of the list with a 92 overall season grade, which is Hall of Fame level, that's unbelievable, is Myles Garrett, followed by Max Crosby, who we're going to have to deal with next week. I can't even say. Okoronkwo for the Los Angeles Rams is at an 89. TJ Watt is at an 89. And Joey and Nick Bosa are both at an 88. And that's
funny.
That's a pretty good list, man. What talk about?
They are kind of like the same guy, too. Like when I see them, I'm like, oh, that's a Bosa. Yep. That's a Bosa.
They look just like each other, except for Nick's a little like thicker in the face and a little bit bigger. But man, talk about a family that went through some milk growing up. So that was those ones. I'll just go through a couple real quick, and we'll fly forward. Baker Mayfield had his best in a while with an 80, so his stat line wasn't perfect, but clearly he was much more on point play for play. Dearness Johnson, who we've been talking about, once again outscored Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, and they did fine. But Dearness Johnson came in with a 92 on 14 plays.
It looks like when he gets his chance. looks like we're going to be needing him too. I know
we
had that queued up for later, but
Hunt looks like he's going to miss some time again. I don't think it's super serious. I didn't hear the report, but he's probably
they did
miss
some
time.
If they needed him that he could have been back out. But
yeah, I think it's just his ankle, sprained his ankle. But if nothing else, you're going to keep a pretty big rotation because you're not going to overwork Hunt coming off that calf injury and now an ankle. Notable stuff for that was Nick Chubb was contacted typically only 0.4 yards past the line of scrimmage was his average time he was contacted. Jeez. That's how good the Ravens run defense is because we have a pretty good rushing line. And he was able to still force 5 missed tackles. So in a game where he only had a 71, but I mean, he just still just pounded. But D'Ernest Johnson is just consistent. It's getting to the point where he's played enough snaps in games. This kid can play some football. So Jim was right. I think Jim was just being a fantasy football homer, but he was right. He can play. And the receiving core, nothing to write home about. Jarvis was okay. Donovan Peoples-Jones had an 81.
Well, wait a minute now.
Best games.
I did want to acknowledge Donovan Peoples-Jones' catch. I feel like it didn't get enough attention, but that had to be one of the best catches I've seen in a long time.
It's one of the best catches this season. It was unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean, he caught that with his toe drags going, like both feet dragging. It was incredible.
Yep, yep. And then a few other big ones. And not only, by the way, not only did he make that catch, that was on a pass interference call. Like he and somebody was all over.
Oh,
him. Like,
that's
wow,
right.
Talk about making that play. And if they hadn't made that call, the fact that he was able to come down with that and then just let it fall and wave his hands at the ref, you know, makes me really love that kid. If we could find a way to get him consistent, this kid is our biggest receiving weapon probably going forward because he's so young and he's so raw and he just has shown over and over the ability to just do something pretty amazing. So
just to add to your Chubb yards after or how quickly he was contacted.
Yeah.
He's still second, and he has been, I think, the whole year. He's second in the league in yards after contact at 500 yards.
Wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
what the dude does well. Like, he just bounces off contact, and if you don't take him, which is why I think you have to stick to the run in some of these games because even if it's not working, one of them he is going to just break because that is his superpower.
And he's not even – I mean, he's kind of in looking through the top 20 or so – he's right in the middle as far as actually broken tackles. So it's not even like he's having to contact. Like he's still getting past people. He has more yards. He's got over 50%. He's at like almost 60% of his yards are after contact. And just a fun guessing game for you too. Any guesses who number 3 is? Jonathan Taylor's the first.
You know, I want to say Derrick Henry, even though he hasn't been playing, I know he hit a lot.
Yeah, it is Henry. Chubb's only about 20 yards past him, but yeah.
I was either going to say him or Williams.
Henry is still third.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, Henry's pretty elite there. All right, so, you know, it's just nice to see, and we're not going to go through every score of every player. A lot of the guys have 60s, which is just nice to see because it's been a while seeing Jarvis in the 60s and JoJo Natson getting in there around that spot. Hooper had a rough game, but at least made a play or two when we really needed it. But we'll go through some more of the elites. Joel Bitonio is killing it this year, and he's has himself sitting as one of the top 3 guards in the entire league with a 92 today, which only raises his score. J.C. Treader, Jedrick Wills, Wyatt Teller all had pretty good games as well. And moving on to the defensive side of the ball, our defensive ends, our edge defenders were awesome. And what's really funny is Clowney did not have a great score. He had a 65. But when you watched the game, you saw that the plays he did make were such impactful plays that you would take that most of the time. He just pounded and even battles that he lost and couldn't make plays, just like the last time we played the Ravens, he just kept going at it. And eventually he made 2 or 3 hugely impactful game plays that helped to win this game. Tack McKinley had one of his best games with a 67, and I think he might be the one that popped out that one fumble, and he got in for a sack. He was a killer this game. It's really nice to see with how much he played. He made something happen. Efedi Odenigbo, am I saying that? Was I close?
Odenigbo.
Odenigbo? Odenigbo. I love it. Man, I love that guy. So he's a Cleveland dude. I remember that. I don't remember where he went to college, but I know he was a Cleveland guy. He had a 77. He had a great game, and he actually was the one, I think, that pulled up that fumble that Tack McKinley made. And, of course, we went over Myles Garrett. He's so good. Our defensive line stinks. We won't go over them, but most of them were under 60, which is a shame, but that's starting to get pretty consistent with this team. Jeremiah,
if you're expecting them to do run stopping against the Ravens,
yeah, I mean, they're not going to, but they've just consistently been just so bad. So we'll go over that in the offseason. That's going to be probably our spot of weakness. But you're right. This, if they're going to have a bad game, this is where it's going to be, especially with Tyler Huntley running circles around everybody. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa came through with a 66, which is one of his not greatest grades, but again, pretty tough competition, and he still showed up and made some plays. Malcolm Smith also played pretty well with the absence of Walker with a 62. And then at cornerback, we didn't have great scores, but we had great plays. So the cornerbacks all were pretty much rolling in there somewhere around the 60s, with Denzel Ward a little higher. But you saw elite plays from Troy Hill, Denzel Ward. Greedy Williams did his best to keep up with Rashard Bateman, and MJ Stewart is just getting back in the mix and made a couple of good plays. So for me, that was really big to see.
With Troy Hill, another nice thing is he's getting behind the line of scrimmage again. I'm seeing three tackles for a loss. It's interesting to see how they're using him, like a blitzing corner. Mm-hmm. And he's really doing
– he does well.
He does really well at it.
Yeah, they found a skill set that – even the Rams, I don't think, ever utilized. And then speaking of behind the line of scrimmage, John Johnson III was behind the line of scrimmage several times and causing noise in the back. 73 great today. And like I said, a lot of these guys got beat here and there because they play a really fast, difficult team to keep up with.
Mm-hmm.
But they really made – it was more like they were a little bit inconsistent, but they also made some big defensive plays that sort of make up for it. Grant Delpit, again, had around a 60. He's just a guy who is trying to get his feet under him and had a tough job today, but he is really working himself back into things.
A stat that jumps out at me right now with Delpit is he leads the team that game in tackles. He actually solo logged 11 tackles.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy from the safety position. That's pretty impressive. And I think it had a lot to do with tons of passes to the tight end and him chasing around.
That's true, yeah.
Huntley, but he's the type of guy, similarly to Koramoa, who is, you're thinking, we're drafting this guy because he can go sideline to sideline, and we need someone who can chase anybody, especially Lamar Jackson, and apparently now Tyler Huntley. All right, so I don't know. So the PFF scores, to me, this is one of the weird games because I know – we've talked about this before where PFF, we had a lot of guys with great scores, but this is one of those games where I think it actually doesn't tell the story of the game only because it grades every play as only one score, and the Browns defense sort of was a big play defense today. Don't you guys think? So it's a little different than a normal grade.
And it doesn't account for opponent, right? It's not DVOA, right? Like going ahead and accounting for situation and all of those things. I think it's a good tool to use when kind of judging overall and maybe throughout the length of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And it is nice to take a look back at, hey, does the eye test show that, or is every offensive lineman complaining on Twitter about their PFF score right because they don't know what the play call is? So if you're evaluating someone on an assumed play that actually wasn't what was called, you have no chance of scoring that player accurately.
Yeah. But, and I love BFF. Everybody knows that. Yeah, everybody knows that. But I think the one thing I always talk about, that the only thing that PFF really leaves out is that, and you're right, I didn't even think of that. It kind of leaves out who you're playing, because you're going to score worse against better competition. But the big thing to me it leaves out is that it doesn't count quite enough of a positive to when you make a play that's an interception for a touchdown or a sack that causes a fumble, because that changes the game. But in your grade, it only changes that one play. So, yeah, so this was a game where I thought players may have been inconsistent, and the way we played against this offense, they were. I think it looked that way on the field, but they made bigger plays than the Ravens made, and their defense was able to just make enough big plays to really change our momentum on multiple occasions. So I was super excited about that. You're right, Dale. Yeah, Centerville, Ohio. So he's from closer to what, Dayton? Is that between Dayton and something like that?
I'm going to go with outside of Columbus.
Yeah, okay. It might be. So it's somewhere south of Columbus. But yeah. Essentially, he's an Ohio guy. So I think it's pretty fun that he's playing there. Anything else you guys found huge from this game on a person-by-person basis? I had marked down that I thought it was nice to see Jarvis Landry, as he gets healthier, still has a little something left. Anything else you guys had been thinking about?
The one thing that just kind of rang as you hit a couple of those guys, and we talked about some of the great play, like most of the guys, not the defensive ones, but on offense and we're not going to have them next week. We can get into that a little bit more, but almost every name you brought up, I was excited for the game that they had, and then went, we don't have them next week.
Yeah, some of those guys. I think Troy Hill's one of them, right?
Well, I mean, our offensive line is in trouble. Mm-hmm. We had eight new guys today. The NFL total, I think I want to say 76.
Everyone's favorite everyone's favorite pass catcher, Austin Hooper.
Yeah, I mean, he was our only tight end, but Tack McKinley, Landry, Hooper, Teller, and Wills. That's not
great. Jesus. How are you even going to roster a team?
I didn't really like the way that I saw a couple mentions that were basically just like no Baker as of now.
Now, are they already ruled out, or do they have an opportunity to test negative and get back in?
So they're in the enhanced COVID protocols. I think they can't. So it depends on the actual like day and the positive, the negative test and a PCR, but we play on Saturday. Like, we lost a day.
Yeah, that hurts.
So that puts us at a disadvantage. Now, given that we're in advanced protocols along with like three or four other teams, it's going to be interesting to see like who can get back. I find it unlikely that this is a slew of like false positives. And so,
yeah, probably not.
That's not going to change. Just if it was just us, or if it was something, I don't know.
Well, thanks for bringing down the mood, Dale.
Yep. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
You guys have a good night.
I'm celebrating our highest PFF scores. And Dale's like, yeah too bad. All of those guys have COVID and we'll
just getting sadder and sadder.
Well, it gets worse. I read that there's 24 more names, or I'm sorry, 25 names to be released soon too.
Dude, we're going to
that's league wide.
A couple hours ago, it was 76 in 2 days. And I think they said today was the highest ever. So it'll be interesting to see if they do actually get to adjusting, moving games. That's TBD. The NFL said at the beginning of the season they wouldn't be doing that, but
this Omicron, man, am I right?
Yeah,
maybe.
All right. Well, the only other thing I have on the positive side before we get to a couple things that need fixed, and the fixed stuff I'm not going to dwell on, because some of it is stuff that we need to improve as the season goes on, as we make a run, and some of it is things that they're not going to be able to make giant changes on. Like we said, the defensive line is kind of bunk, but they're not going to be able to fix that till the offseason. So I don't even want to get too into that. But there's some things they can clean up and give them a better shot if they get to get back on the field to be better. One thing I did notice is the Browns moved up this week on the power rankings we've been following to 14. That's one spot above the Bengals, still behind the Ravens, despite beating them and playing right with them last time, and despite Lamar's injury. But it does sound like Lamar could be back as soon as this week, and they definitely have a better playoff shot than us, so I get it. But we are one spot there above the Bengals. You guys think that's probably a fair spot for us at this point?
I do. I mean, we haven't been very impressive on offense. We've been pretty bad, actually. So, and the Bengals actually have what I would consider one of the league's best offenses, to be honest, when they want to be. I mean, they've had some bad weeks, but when they want to be good, I mean, when all cylinders are hitting, that's a hard offense to stop.
Yeah.
It is interesting. So if you're looking at the AFC, there's five teams at 7-6, and we're just on the outside. But if I read you off the teams, Colts, Bills, Browns, Bengals, Broncos, and if I was going to, like, put a stake in the ground and be like, we are better than and feel super confident, I know I can say the Broncos.
I do think we are better than the Broncos.
I was actually really surprised to see them at that number on the list.
Yeah, they've been okay lately.
Yeah, as Chip said, that I mean, the Bengals offense definitely is scary, and really what they were able to do with their defense, which doesn't really get a lot of credit. The Colts have they've started to turn things around. They have impressive wins. I don't know what the Bills are doing at all. They seem pretty banged up and
reeling a little bit.
And I mean, they lose a game to Tampa in a close one at that. It wasn't to start, but they really made a run. So to be with those teams, to still be kind of in the hunt there, I'm still trying to get used to this whole three wild card situation and an extra week of football, but I think it seems pretty fair. We got some losses in there. I know we really want back. And we could easily have a couple more wins and
be still getting them back
at the top and above the Ravens and have a spot that way as a conference champ. But yeah, it's kind of where we are right now. And
yeah,
but I'll take the wins and be pretty happy with them.
Yeah. So I think going forward, I have this list of a couple things below here. Let me know what you guys think. The number one thing I have on my list for things that we really need to fix is fourth quarter points. I did say that's, you know, they did put together a drive or two that I thought they should have scored points on us. It's especially frustrating that one was a missed kick, but it was a trend that's been going on for long enough that I think that should be on top of their list. So fourth quarter points, scoring more points at the beginning of the game compared to the half just tells me that they're not making as good of offensive adjustments as the other team is making defensive adjustments. What do you guys think?
Going to your first point on the around kind of the end of the game stuff, I agree where we started off. It is frustrating to not come away with points in the second half, but I do trust the coach in that, like, they're running situational football. They're trying to put games away. It is so frustrating to watch and not get some extra points to have the game end up the score that it is. I mean, if you were just kind of checking box scores, you'd be like, oh, that was it was a close one there in that game. I didn't feel that way.
It wasn't. Watching the game. I never felt like they had us at any
point. I never felt that it was close. They got there at the end. Huntley did what they needed to get some points on the board at the end of the game. I mean, definitely give him kudos for that. But like, I feel like our coaches did a good job of putting us in a situation like we weren't going to lose that game. And I was not at all concerned, but it is kind of, you're looking back at it going like, man, we pulled this one out, but we did it. Like, we won that game. It wasn't close like the score looks. And yeah, it'd be really nice to see Baker over 200 yards, like, ever, just ever. but like, I'm not going to argue with the results.
And Dale, I think the entire Browns team would probably agree with your statement there. And they probably felt like as soon as Lamar left, you know, they were up like, what, 24-6 at one point. I think they also felt like the game was, you know, pretty much closed up and started to fall asleep at the wheel. But to the fourth quarter points, you know, I mean, it is just so – I'm just so over it. Like, this whole, like, second half football on our team, I don't understand what's going on the offense. It's like, all right, we used up everything we practiced. What are we doing third, fourth quarter? I don't know. Let's just go out there and wing it.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like they – and their defense – did great. The defense came out in the second half, and I know that they scored some points, but man, did that look like a lot of desperation plays in what you would normally consider kind of garbage time points. But the offense just always seems so much worse in the second half, and their defense always seems to have figured something out. So it's a bad trend. Hopefully they can find some way to change it. Hopefully even it can happen this season if they're going to make a run.
Even with having what was my point? I kind of blanked out there. I was basically just going to say that, you know, when we had that lead, I don't understand why we didn't run more in the third and fourth quarter, even though, okay, that's what I was going to say. Even knowing that their run defense is as strong as it is, we gave up on the run game with the lead, and you went 3-and-out on passing with the lead.
Yeah, and I think this is sort of just what we talked about with the Ravens, where you think, well, we've been passing pretty well. They can't seem to stop it. Normally at this point in the game, you would just run until it's over, but that's the one thing they do well. And I could have used more late rushes also, but I get why they didn't, but I would have still, you know, tried for that. And I think they did on one possession and it didn't go well. And then they switched to passing. And then they switched back to running, but I think it was mostly like, well, hey, if we couldn't get anywhere passing the ball, at least running burned out the clock. Let's close this game out. And they did it, and it was not the prettiest, but they did it. I wanted to bring up, and this is, tell me what you guys think about this, because we talked about it a lot at the bar. We were all kind of joking and laughing about it. The Ravens win all the time. They win sloppy games. They win good games. They win bad games. There's just something magical about them being able to win a game that they have no business winning. So part of what I was so excited about it was this about this game was they seem like the luckiest team in the league. They're the type of team that can somehow get the ball back and get in position to kick a 70-yarder to win the game. Or they're the type of team that, oh, they're down by 4 points and the other team has the ball, but somehow the other team fumbles a snap and they jump on it. And then they're able to go 26 yards for a touchdown with 54 seconds left to win when there was no way any other team is winning that game, right? It's like they seem to win these games by pure like determination mixed with luck. And this was that exact game where the Browns had them the whole game. They had no business winning. Somehow with Tyler Huntley coming in, he's outplaying. He was better than Lamar the last 2-3 weeks. He just looked better, and maybe it was because the Browns weren't prepped for him. Or, you know, there was a point on the sideline. Yeah, did you guys see on the sideline the point where Jadeveon Clowney was, I think, talking to Miles? He's like, man, can we get Lamar back out there? And it was just like they were not ready for how quick this dude was. And I think as a quarterback, to expect Huntley to do what Lamar has done the last couple of years – good luck, Baltimore. But for a game or two, he's just so damn quick. He looked so fast. And then they get this miracle onside kick. And I swear I saw a stat that this was the first time they've gotten an onside kick in like 12 years after they got it. And I was like, of course, of all the scenarios, this game is over. The Browns basically just let them run down the field just so they would burn the clock off And then all they have to do is get the ball in good field position and run out the clock. And it bounces off one of the special teams players' shoulders, and the Ravens get it. And so this had every makings of the Ravens winning a game they shouldn't have won. And our defense came out on that last drive and just pounded them to the ground with huge plays from Clowney and Denzel Ward and some of our biggest playmakers to say, not this week. It's not going to happen this week. And it just kept the Browns in the playoff race. And that's why I think I was so hyped about this win.
Yeah, getting back in the playoff conversation is definitely good news.
Yeah, old Browns, this would have been a loss. I think all of us would agree a couple years ago, this was a loss. You deserved to win. You made some dumb mistakes at the end, and this is a game the Browns used to lose, and they just didn't. So I'm excited about it, and I'll stay excited about it for now. Special teams has to be addressed. Holy cow. Are you kidding me? Let's go through the list. Number one, our punt returner, who got replaced after two punts, dropped both of his first punt returns and fumbled them, was able to jump on them, but
I hate
Jesus.
You ever feel worse for a guy watching football than
it looks bad. It just
because nobody wants to hit
the
it.
Ground. He flops on it, and you're just like, no. It was awful. And then we missed a 41 yarder? Was it something like that? Like a 40-ish yarder? Not great. This dude's missed something like four out of his last eight kicks, and that now puts him as the 34th kicker in the league. There's only 32 teams, but in field goal percentage, this guy, who was 8 for 8 to start the season, somehow is now the 34th best kicker in the NFL out of 32 teams. How does this keep happening to the Browns? And then thirdly, what is our onside kicking hands team doing out there? There was the craziest combination of players. Are you telling me there's not enough receivers, running backs, and cornerbacks to put 11 guys across the field to just catch the ball and fall, that you've got fullbacks and linemen in that mix?
That's an interesting one, because that's where you get into really some of the kind of nerdy and interesting roster construction stuff, where you got to address guys that can come in and spot fill on game day on the offense and defense, but they have to be able to play special teams. So, yeah, it gets interesting when they start doing some roster construction stuff and making sure you got depth at certain positions. And yeah, I don't know what we're doing out there that we don't. I don't know. Did we lose all of our practice squad guys? Like, what? I know we're out of tight ends. So if your hands team typically includes three tight ends, well, that's tough.
That's a good point. Hunt's, probably have Kareem Hunt on there.
Hunt, I was going to say Hunt wouldn't have been in. So you're out of Hunt and Njoku.
It was just a crazy combination. And I remember looking across the line and thinking, that's the hands team. Holy cow. So I don't know, but with all those problems, and it's not like one thing's going wrong on the special teams, I think it's probably time to start taking heat off of Joe Woods and start thinking about if any coach needs to get it together, because he's on the hot seat. It's our special teams coordinator. And this has been an ongoing problem all season on every facet of special teams. And I just don't know how nobody is mentioning that this guy has to get it fixed. Or I think he's been with us a couple of years too, Mike Prefer, right? But this year, last year wasn't great either, but this year is even worse. And maybe you're right. Maybe it has to do with the break.
Just the personnel. Seems to me like they've gotten out there, but yeah.
Yeah, it seems like they've gotten good, young, fast players who should make special teams better. So I don't know. Somehow our least problematic part of special teams was the fact that our punter had COVID, and we had to bring a punter in off the streets on 4 days' notice to punt. And he actually is out punting our real punter. Don't be shocked, despite his mediocre performance, if he's actually the person back on this team. I looked up their net punt yards for the season, and right now, the punter they just brought in is 27th out of 32 teams in the NFL, 27th in net punt yards, and the Hammer is 29th. 29th in the NFL with net punt yards. And
I mean, it's nice we brought in Colquitt, and
it's nice that we have another Colquitt, and it's nice that somebody dropped him in time for us to get him, bail us out.
I still think we should have went with Mac Wilson there for punter.
I gotta tell you, I thought that might happen, and I was like,
I did too. It got really close.
Some punt.
It got really close to happening.
I was waiting for him to boom some punt and then run down and make the tackle, and everybody send me an immediate tweet.
Yep.
You're an idiot. We need this. He's the best. All right, guys.
Colquitt was hitting him 39 yards, which is his age.
Yeah, okay.
So that seems appropriate. That's kind of like some senior PGA type, just shoot your age.
We need to fix every part of the special teams, I think. And hopefully it's not going to happen. That's another, it's not going to happen this season. So hopefully it happens soon. So, all right, we got about 10 minutes left. Let's get through a couple more big things. Number one is obviously next week's opponent, and it's the Raiders. Like you said, it moved to Saturday. I don't know, all the guys are going to be out, and I'm not sure we should spend much time talking about it because some of these guys might get 2 negative tests and they'll be right back. But what you can say is there's going to be a lot of guys out for the Browns, and most likely they should have gone into a game with a team that they're much better than, and they may be so shorthanded. And that's just the luck of the Browns this year, that they still are going to have some kind of battle on their hands.
I'm pretty interested in the game to see how it goes. The Raiders, they're 1-6 in their last six games after their bye. So they had their bye week, lost three straight, took an overtime win against Dallas, which is a good team. And then L's to the football team and Chiefs. And man, I mean, they haven't been able to run the ball, which is fine.
Just killing my fantasy team.
Yeah, that will happen.
It's fine. It's fine.
I mean, they had 5 turnovers against the Chiefs. The Chiefs don't have a good defense. Like, the Chiefs have an atrocious defense.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Bottom of the league team in defense, and held them under 300 total yards and 5 turnovers. Like, I'm intrigued to see what does happen with who we have. But if we end up in this game with a mostly, what at least the initial reports, most guys were on the offense except Tack, who are out. But if we end up with a mostly healthy defense out there, I'm not going to feel terrible about our chances in this game, because if the Chiefs can hold them to 9, I don't know, we can blank them.
Get my line out there and give me one of these 3 running backs to go play. And
yeah, well,
and in case anybody missed that, what Dale said earlier, the Chiefs are have won 1 out of their last 6 games. The Chiefs are 6-7, which means in the first 7 games of the season, the Chiefs got 5 of their wins. And then the Raiders. I'm sorry. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry. The Raiders. So when he said they're 1 out of their last 6, that means they were 5 out of their first 7, and they were looking real strong to start the season, and it has just fallen off a cliff. The Chiefs beat them up, but let's be honest, at least on the offensive side of the ball, the Chiefs have really pulled it together, and they have been kind of on a run.
And so, I know Hunter Renfrow is a good route runner or whatever. I'm not going to discredit the kid, but come on. Ward is probably salivating right now at locking down Hunter Renfrow next week.
Yeah. And, so
Derek Carr got sacked, 4 times last week against a mediocre pass rush. I'm thinking a good 6 sacks probably next week.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of this depends. If there wasn't COVID, I was going to come into this extremely optimistic, because matchup wise, this is the matchup we've been looking for. Their biggest weaknesses are their offensive line, and our big strength is pass rushing. Their other big weakness is their defensive line. and our strength has been our offensive line. And they're pretty weak at and we play a lot of tight ends. So this would have been, and hopefully still will be, a prime setup for us. Their strengths, however, is definitely tight end, which we've struggled with. God, we struggled this week against Andrews.
And just a quick injury report from today. Waller did not participate again. And okay. And
that's good.
And Moreau was limited, which, I mean, he's been banged up too. But from what I was reading, it's not a good sign that Waller is still not practicing. Yeah. So,
and especially because, I mean, that is their strength. Darren Waller is their strength on the offense. They don't run well. They have good, I guess, what would you call them even? Good average receivers. They have consistent receivers, but nobody that's going to scare our secondary, because that's sort of where
they have possession receiver. Like, thrive. They're not going to take the top off of us.
Yes. Totally.
Like, they're going to get stuff off over the middle, crossing routes, that type of stuff, which could be scary. But
yeah,
I mean, you don't have Waller out there. And their defense is what the injury report's full of who's not participating. And Denzel Perryman did not participate again. I think he was out last week. Trayvon Mullen did not participate, one of their cornerbacks. Max Crosby was limited. I mean, Markell Lee was full participant, so he's trending. I mean, he'll probably play this week, but yeah, the injury report is just their defense, like and Foster Moreau.
So that makes me feel a little better with us having all of these guys out
on offense
for possible COVID. But the reality is, even when their defense has their players, their strengths is their secondary and their rushers, and because their defensive line and linebackers aren't good, we would just be running it against them and just pounding it play after play. So that really is the game plan for this week. Mm-hmm. If you can get your players out there. And I know we've said that before, and we even say it against teams like the Steelers and the Ravens, which you have to know the reality that you're just not going to run that much on them. But this team you can run on, and the Browns should be able to do that. So you should be running the ball and rushing the passer, because they're – offensive line is not good, and although our defensive line isn't great, our rushers are tremendous right now. So COVID and injuries will be the decider, I think, in this game, but it's pretty clear the better team and the better matchup is the Browns. And so hopefully everybody gets back, at least enough players that we can do what we should be able to plan to do against this team. So, and the Saturday thing's tripping me out. I might miss part of the game because I'm going to be traveling up to Orange County to see some friends who are moving to London before they leave. And I planned that before this whole schedule change. So hopefully I can catch everything, but it is a bummer for the COVID riddled Browns and for me that this game is on a Saturday. And I was so excited for it. I was like, Saturday game, this is going to be great. And now everything points to, I wish it was Sunday.
So, you know what? It is good that we're not the Jaguars.
Oh my gosh, Jaguars are bad. Did you guys watch any of the Urban Meyer press conference? That was like my sports headline of the week.
I missed the conference. Urban Meyer presser. Okay. But I saw.
Did you see highlights or?
So, well, I saw all the reports of his like staff and other people saying that he was like chewing them out, that they're losers, and all of this other nonsense.
And like call, resume calling, like, hey, what have you ever done in your career? I'm a champion, which is the last thing you want to hear from a head coach of a losing team. Yeah, it's like, are you kidding me? Your job as the head coach is to hire good personnel. So if you're calling them out.
And one of the first guys he hired, he immediately had to fire. Because
that was a rough start.
His strength and conditioning coach was there for like a day, and they're like, No, you have to leave. You can't be here.
You know, with Urban, it's gotten to the point for me. I love around the lake gossip, but I can't even, as soon as I see his name in a headline anymore, I'm like, just go scroll past. I can't.
There's just look. Some phenomenal memes and just some really good stuff this weekend. So I appreciate him. It is gone. I did not think it was going to go well. I thought he was going to be the stereotypical college coach. He's far exceeded my expectations at how poorly it's gone. So, I mean, really kudos to him. Didn't think it was going to be possible, but just really couldn't be prouder.
I just say there will always be a place in my heart for Urban in the right setting.
Bowling Green is the setting.
It is not in the NFL. And I think I was pretty skeptical of this whole situation starting off. But
maybe the Jags will do something sensible, like hire Jim Caldwell, like a respected.
Yeah, I'd like good, to see a
successful NFL coach.
Just hopefully, like, someday there's like a behind the scenes 30 for 30. I'd like to see like everything going on, you know, behind the scenes.
You're going to hear a lot when he gets fired in the offseason.
Yeah.
Offseason, you're going to start hearing stuff, I think. So,
I mean, he lost the locker room 12 weeks ago. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think he lost the locker room when he stayed sitting in Cincinnati. And that's pretty much been – it's been quiet since, but it's pretty clear that if he's not done there, that's a giant mistake. So, I don't know. That was just one of my favorite headlines for the week. I was so happy to see something that made me, like, chuckle outside of Brown's world. Chip, it's time real quick for your Cavs weekly update. We're going to start talking Cavs more because, let's face it, the Cavs season, which I usually don't really get into until after football season, or at least until January, when the Browns are typically out of it. Maybe not this year again. But if you guys aren't watching this team, you're crazy. They're so fun, and their roster is so young and has so many kind of up-and-coming players that are worth rooting for. You should be checking them out. Where are we at right now, Chip?
Yeah, we are currently ranked fourth in the Eastern Conference. We actually won 8 out of our last 10 games. Nice little hot streak there. I mean, the team is just – they're firing on all cylinders, Chad. They look awesome on defense, creating turnovers, and then they bring it back and score. We're not just beating teams. We're demoralizing teams and away as well. After we beat Minnesota the other week, I saw Karl Anthony Towns hit the podium, and it almost looked like he was going to break out in tears. I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was bad. I mean, we're destroying teams. We're beating them by 25, 30 points.
I think out of everything that's going on with the Cavs recently, I think the most encouraging thing, because I think I did pick them to be about 500, between 500 and 550, and probably miss the playoffs, which it looks like I'm going to be wrong on that, which is awesome. But the most exciting thing is it does not look like it's a situation where they have an easy beginning of the schedule and they're just, you know, skating by a couple teams and it's going to catch up to them. I think they're number 4 in the East now, and they've already beat almost all of the other teams that are up in that top of the East. Like, they've at least won a game against the other teams that are in that top 10. So it's not like they just had a really fortunate beginning of the schedule where they play the Pistons over and over, but they just beat the Heat, right? I think they just beat the Bulls. Yeah. They're beating the other teams that are either ahead of them in the standings or with them. And I know it's not relevant because he's going to be out for the whole season, but they're doing this without what was one of their most dynamic players in Colin Sexton.
Right.
They've kind of used that loss of Sexton to find a more team dynamic. They play a lot more like what I remember some of these Celtic teams that didn't have one specific go-to superstar on the team, but a lot of young, talented players. They play more of that kind of game. And I think that's been pretty awesome to watch.
Yeah, I think Darius Garland really found his spot, and he's been a really good scorer for us. I think he's leading the team in scoring about 19, 20 points a game.
Yeah, he's looking like he's going to turn himself into a superstar, and that surprises me because I did not know he had that level of upside. And I think we talked about it last week. Mobley looks like a rookie of the year candidate, and he's at the top of the running right now. And Jared Allen is better than almost all of us thought he was going to be. And so Kevin Love had a 23-point game the other day. Kevin Love is playing like it doesn't, like he's just finally free of the reins. He's not out with injuries. Right. They're not trying to hold his minutes so they can finish even lower in the standings. He's just out there as a off the bench role player. And it almost looks like he's finally just a weight off my shoulders. I don't have to carry a terrible team. Nobody's looking at me to do anything. And he's just playing really free. He was in the paint last week. He was able to drop a couple threes, and he looked like Kevin Love from 5 years ago this week. That was really fun to watch.
Yeah, he does. He's like really like happy because I feel like there's no pressure on him anymore. He's just kind of like there. He's just wandering around.
Playing his role, right?
Yeah.
He really is just like, there's no pressure on me. I'm just playing a role. I'm rolling through my career. This team is actually good and fun to play with.
Right.
And I'm just going to come in and do a little dance.
And I think that's it too. They're having fun. The chemistry is there and the team is just, they're all bonding well. They're having fun.
Yeah. All right. I didn't want to get a lot into NFL recaps, and we're about at our time anyway. So I just wanted to go over a couple quick things. The Bills and the Bucks game, I think, is worth mentioning because we talked about it a little bit. Whoa. What have we got going on over there?
That was my bad.
Is that some Dallas highlights?
I had the box scores up, and for some reason, every once in a while, the little video goes up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've had that before, too.
Before we get back, I'm logging the timeline for you there, Chip.
All right. In case everyone else wants to know.
So just to close things out real quick, we'll do a couple quick game highlights of some of the ones that were relevant to the Browns in this playoff run. The Bills lost again, and do they now have the same record as the Browns? Are they 7-6?
Yes they do.
Yeah,
that's relevant, and I think they're a better team than us. We won't get too into it, but they lost to a really good Bucks team, but that sends them on a little bit of a spiral where they're not playing their best ball right now.
I think that Josh Allen is a better quarterback than Baker, but I don't think they're a better team.
Yeah, they just look like they're trying to ride on Josh Allen right now, and they aren't playing to all their strengths. They don't run much.
He got banged up too.
Yeah,
with an ankle, but I did see him getting pictures taken of him out at a theater show, and people saying he was not on a walking boot. So.
It's hard to have this segment without Jim.
Yeah, I know. It's sad to talk about the Bills loss without Jim being there, but we know he's listening and he's in our hearts. The Steelers, was that the Thursday night game? Man, the Vikings owned them the whole game. They made that late run, and I don't even want to get into it. I don't know how the Vikings let them do that, but that does seem like a very Vikings thing to do. But the Vikings handled them. They lost this week. The Bengals lost this week in a cruncher against the 49ers. And watching that go into overtime, I thought for sure they were going to find a way to make it work. And then what did they score? A field goal. And then the 49ers went down and scored on them. Woof.
It was a lot of back and forth. I mean, if you're looking at a big picture, the Steelers looked absolutely atrocious, embarrassing. All of my Steelers friends fans, I think, went to sleep before the game ended. They were just like, I'm not doing this. They, like you said, they made it a bit of a comeback at the end. But man, that the Bengals seem a little Jekyll and Hyde, and you get a game like that, you're like, man, they're going to be a problem. And I really
kind of are though.
Really hate having Burrow and Chase in our division for the very, very foreseeable future. So hopefully they kind of are, though.
They do look like they sort of like have this game where you look at them and you think, damn, that's going to be the team to beat for the coming years. And then they play a different game and you think, oh, we can take them.
They're so young. I would say the players, but I think Joe Burrow might be 30, but like the coach, they're a young team. They're a young team, just
they are.
Overall experience wise.
They have great talent. They have great playmakers on the offense, and I would trade ours for theirs in a second in the receiving core. They just those three young receivers, man. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue that at this point, if you could swap those two, you wouldn't. The Chargers beat the Giants. The Giants are bad, so who cares? I guess I care because the Chargers take another game ahead of us. The wild card, and they beat us, so they've got a tiebreaker. That's going to be relevant when everything closes. And finally, Dale, your Titans continue.
That was one of the ones that would have been nice to go the other way.
Yeah, they continue to find a way to win these games, and they've got 9 wins now, putting them clearly ahead of most of the AFC. It's what, them and the Chiefs and
the Patriots. So the Patriots, yep. There's, it's those three at the top. Then you got Ravens and Chargers at 8-5, and then a whole mess at 7-6. I mean, but the way things have shaken out, there's still a decent amount of football. You have Steelers, Raiders, Dolphins at 6-7 or 6-1. Like, they're still in it. Like, all of those teams. I mean, if you want to cross teams off, you can to the Jets, Texans, and Jags. But everyone else is kind of alive.
Yep. That's how it's going. And
especially after what may happen here this weekend with COVID, things could flip. With teams that are in those like protocols.
I really thought with that win this week, the Browns put themselves in a position to go in, pound the Raiders, get themselves to 8 wins, let a couple of these other teams shake themselves down and really put us in a position where we are in control of our destiny. And COVID may get in our way, just like it has been for the entire year. But
that Bills and Bengals loss, though, you got to be happy about those. We all really of the needed AFC those.
North
really
losses.
Needed those.
All of the AFC losses really helped us. Yep. So going into next week, we're sort of in the driver's seat. Let's see what the Browns can do. All right.
Sounds good, fellas.
All right. That's about it for me. You guys have anything else?
That'll do it.
All right. Let's close it down. I'll see you guys next week.
Yeah. Always good tuning in with you guys. Enjoy yourselves.
If anybody's still have listening, Saturday, like and follow us on Coast, the number 2, Coast X3 on everything social media. Like, subscribe, follow, and send us some messages, guys. We've gotten a little bit of feedback from some people and some things they want to hear and want to talk about, and we'd love to hear it. All right?
Yeah, definitely.
Take care till next week.
Alrighty.
Bye-bye.